You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Today,
I kind of liken it sometimes to a destructive fax machine.
We review the year in physics with quantum physicist Ian Durham.
The property is such that electric charge could be conducted through these materials ridiculously fast, which would speed up electronic circuits even more.
I'm Zia Morali. Welcome to the second part in a special series of podcasts from the Foundational Questions Institute. Once again, my usual co-host Brendan Foster isn't with me, but I am still pleased to be joined by FQXI member Ian Durham, a quantum physicist at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. We're counting down the big physics stories of the year. In the last edition, Ian announced what didn't quite make his list and the breakthrough that came in at number 5. Now, we're up to breakthrough number 4.
Number four was actually the number 1 for physicsworld.com, but I decided to go make it number 4. This is the double quantum teleportation milestone. So, quantum teleportation. What is quantum teleportation? It's not like Star Trek.
Shame.
You can't teleport a human being or something. And in fact, it doesn't even teleport the physical mass of something. What quantum teleportation is it takes a quantum state and it teleports it. And in order for that to happen, so let's say you have two particles. The first particle has a quantum state. In order to teleport that state from the first particle to the second particle, it can't completely be transported to the other particle until it is completely erased from the first particle, because there's something called the no-cloning theorem. And the no-cloning theorem says you can't perfectly clone a quantum state. So, in order to transfer a state from one particle to another, it has to completely lose, the first particle has to completely lose that state. Now, the way we do this, and quantum teleportation has been around for a long time, since the 80s, and the way we typically do this is we typically teleport one property. A common one is spin or polarization. What's very difficult is to simultaneously teleport more than one property. So, for example, a photon or an electron, for instance, could have both polarization or spin, so that's spin angular momentum, as well as orbital angular momentum. So maybe it's easier to visualize this in terms of electrons in a nucleus, although this is a really dangerous thing because it tends to send the wrong message. But you could visualize this as an electron spinning on an axis, which it doesn't because it's a point particle. So it doesn't really have an axis, but it has spin angular momentum as if it were a little ball spinning. It doesn't, but it behaves as if it does. And then it has angular momentum, it doesn't really do this, as if it goes around the nucleus, like a planet going around the sun, which it doesn't do because it doesn't actually do that, but it behaves that way. So it has these two types of angular momentum. So in order to teleport this from one place to the other, we typically just do one property at a time. What it's very hard to do simultaneously, two properties simultaneously. So what this team has done is they've managed to simultaneously transfer a photon's spin or its polarization and its orbital angular momentum to another photon some distance away. That's a pretty amazing thing.
So this is a Chinese experiment. This is Jianhui Pan and Chaoyang Liu of the University of Science and Technology of China in Hefei. Do we know why it is so difficult to transfer more than one property at a time?
Well, a lot of it has to do with experimental limitations. So in theory, there's no theoretical limitation about this. It's experimental limitations that limit these things. So just to give you an example of a problem, even if you're doing a really simple quantum optics experiment, for example, with photons, one property that you have to worry about, for example, is coherence times. How long do those photons remain coherent with each other? Meaning, how long do they sort of stay in step with one another? And there are a lot of limitations because we're working in situations where you always have environmental noise. And so environmental noise adds a lot of problems. So it's experimental problems like that that get in the way of doing this simultaneously.
So I'm looking at this Physics World write-up. As you say, they named this their number one kind of physics breakthrough of the year. And Pan is saying that they're maybe hoping to get up to teleporting three properties, maybe within the next few years, maybe the next 3 years. But then, you know, it becomes increasingly harder and harder and harder to build on that, as you've just been explaining. You know, at the top of this, you started off by saying, well, you know, this isn't like Star Trek. But, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, well, you know, if they actually could overcome this experimental problem and they learn how to do more and more properties, I mean, not just this group, but other groups, would this take us towards a kind of Star Trek teleportation device? Or are these just two fundamentally very different things where you can't kind of use quantum teleportation, no matter how good it gets, to give you something that can teleport, you know, maybe not people, but maybe, I don't know, a chair or something?
Let's suppose we could teleport a chair. What it would actually do, if you could do this, is it would require having two sets of molecules and atoms to make up the chair. It would be like taking the information about that chair and teleporting all the information about that chair to this other set of atoms. And then as soon as you take that information about that chair out of the chair, it's not a chair anymore. It's now just a glob of atoms. And then you put it into the next chair. So I liken it sometimes to a destructive fax machine. So it's like a fax machine that faxes something, but there's only one original, and as it's faxing, it destroys the original. That's kind of what quantum teleportation is. So in Star Trek, they physically take somebody, and that whole person's body goes from one place to another. That doesn't happen in quantum teleportation in the sense of the matter itself doesn't go from one place to another. It's the information that gets transferred, and the state of that matter gets transferred from one place to another. And it does completely erase whatever state that matter was in. Now, if we could ever, and I can guarantee you we'll never overcome this, but if we could ever do it for a chair or a human being or something like that, again, what you would have to do is you'd have to have a target set of matter somewhere. So let's say we wanted to teleport Captain Kirk down to the surface of a planet. We would need to chunk of atoms and molecules made up of roughly the same material as Captain Kirk, and actually exactly the same material as Captain Kirk, and then we'd have to take all of the information about all of the atoms and all of the molecules in his body out of his body, transfer it to the chunk of molecules and atoms that are on the planet, and hope that in the process we don't lose any information. That's why we'll never see true in teleportation, like Captain Kirk style. What quantum teleportation is really good for, as you can imagine from my fax example, that it's really good for, say, certain communications, cryptographic communications, things like that. So teleportation is really useful from, you want to send information and you want to send it quickly and you want to make sure that you get an exact copy of it and you don't lose any information in the process, and the original you don't care about destroying, then you're good.
You probably haven't been watching Doctor Who this year. but if you have...
I have, but I've been watching... I haven't been watching the current Doctor Who. I've been watching the old John Pertwee Doctor Who's. But...
There's a nice season 9 episode with Peter Capaldi. I don't know, it came into my mind as we were having this discussion, and I shouldn't say any more about it because... spoilers. So
I'm sure my son has been watching it.
You might want to watch Heaven Sent with him.
Okay.
well, you know, we can't get Star Trek, so we'll go with Doctor Who. Right. Number three.
Again, this is sort of in the particle realm. So back in 1929, Hermann Weyl made a prediction. of these particles. They're now called vile fermions. And I say his name is spelled W-E-Y-L. So he's not a vile human being. It's just, you know, but you pronounce his name vile. Anyway, vile fermions were predicted in 1929. Give a little background. In 1928, Paul Dirac discovered the equation that is named after him, which describes the physics of spin half fundamental particles, basically fermions. And it was discovered that that equation predicted the existence of the electron and its antiparticle, the positron, which was discovered in 1932, although they didn't realize they quite had it at first. So there were other solutions to his equation, though, and there are lots of other solutions. And one of the curious ones, another solution to the Dirac equation, involved massless particles. And that's what was derived in 1929 by Hermann Weyl. So what finally happened was there were actually a couple of different groups that spotted Weyl fermions as quasi-particles. So what are quasi-particles? So quasi-particles are, they're like collective excitations of a bunch of other particles. So one of the groups at Princeton, headed by Zahid Hassan, found Weyl fermions as quasi-particles in, they're actually collective excitations of electrons in this case, in a semi-metal known as tantalum arsenide. And they sort of first published these ideas back in 2014, and there were some Chinese folks who had come up with the same idea. And then there was another group at MIT who had spotted Weyl fermions in a completely different material, what's called a double gyroid photonic crystal. And it's basically a crystal made of slabs of plastic that actually has a matrix of holes drilled in them. And then they stack them up. You basically shine microwaves through it. So microwaves are light waves, but a certain set of wavelengths. And it sets a certain path for that microwave radiation to follow through those sheets. And by doing this, they were actually able to map out the photonic band structure of the crystal, which basically revealed in the band structure these areas where they call them Weyl points, which are basically indicative that there are Weyl fermionic states existing in the photonic crystal. So how do I describe that? So the band structure of a material is when it absorbs or emits radiation, so light gets absorbed or emitted by atoms or by molecules or whatever, it does so in discrete levels. It doesn't do so continuously. Let's just take an example. I'll just make this up. Say we have an energy level at 10 electron volts, then we have one at 12, maybe we have one at 15, maybe we have one at 17. That's the band structure of a given metal. That means that electrons in the structure can absorb or emit photons at 10, 12, 15, 17 electron volts. What they saw in the band structure was that the band structure was consistent with the fact that there were spots in it where there had to be these Weyl fermions existing. Again, they were probably not fundamental. They were probably excitations of electrons, but behaving like a Weyl fermion. But it's still pretty amazing that they found this and that the structure is there.
And so I guess, you know, one of the things that people are excited about is that, so I'm picking this up from an article in Science Alert by Fiona McDonald, who says that Weyl electrons can carry charge at least 1,000 times faster than electrons in ordinary semiconductors and twice as fast as inside the wonder material graphene. So, you know, this is something that really could have practical applications.
Actually, graphene is really a 2D material.
That was my bad pronunciation there. That wasn't a 1D material. That was a wonder material, like Wonder Woman kind of.
Oh, wonder.
Material.
It's your lovely British accent. Anyway, the reason this is interesting is because, so graphene is two-dimensional, and electrons have a similar property in graphene, but Weyl fermions, because of the way they exist, this would be a 3D material. The property is such that electric charge could be conducted through these materials ridiculously fast, which would speed up electronic circuits even more. So, you know, imagine your computer overheating now, and imagine how fast it could run if it could do 10 times that. So,
and Hassan seems to have come up with some lovely sound bites. So in the same article, actually, they're quoting him in a press release saying, it's like they have their own GPS and steer themselves without scattering. So, you know,
yeah.
Nice enough. And you'd already sort of made that comment about vile fermions sounding sort of more evil than perhaps they are. But he also says they could lead to a new type of electronics called Viltronics, which I think just has a lovely sound to it. So.
That's good. I like that. Now, of course, these are quasi-particles. They're not fundamental. But nevertheless, in quantum mechanics, we often just talk about quantum states. And, you know, a particle is just a quantum state. Particles don't have identities per se. They're just vessels for carrying quantum states, right? So what is a fermion? Well, a fermion is really anything that carries a quantum state that is a solution to Dirac's equation. And so whether these are fundamental particles or are some weird excitation of electrons, the point is that they satisfy Dirac's equation. So as far as quantum people like me are concerned, these really are vile fermions.
Right. Okay. I don't know if this is a question or a comment, but we've had now, I guess in this discussion, three new kind of particle things. So we had the mysterious particle that's very heavy, that may or may not have been found at the LHC by the CMS and Atlas groups. We've had the pentaquark, which people thought they would find and they had found and then they hadn't found, but now they have found it again. And we've got this one, and this one, unlike the other two, didn't take a multi-billion dollar particle accelerator to find. It took a synthetic crystal. So, and this is nothing against the LHC, because I love the LHC, and obviously they've made some amazing discoveries, but it's sort of, the complete other extreme of, you know, just some people doing something on a tabletop and finding an amazing new particle that could have wonderful applications. So it's a big contrast.
I think we've had this conversation before, because I think one of my previous top five was one of these quasi-particles. And I think I made the comment that one of the really interesting things about condensed matter physics is that they've discovered that they can do a lot in condensed matter physics that they could do in particle physics for a whole heck of a lot cheaper. And that's why condensed matter physics is one of the most fascinating areas of physics now, because you can have these fundamental discoveries in condensed matter systems in something the size of a tabletop, as opposed to using something the size of the LHC, which is 17 kilometers across and costs, you know, billions of dollars. And I don't mean to knock the LHC. I think it's great. And I am saddened that we never finished the superconducting supercollider in this country. But nevertheless, again, as a quantum person, a vile fermion to me is anything that satisfies the Dirac equation. That's good enough for me. And they were able to do this for a fraction of the cost. And there are a lot of these people in condensed matter physics that are doing fundamental physics experiments now in an effort to make these discoveries, because they realize they could do them. They could do some of the stuff that the LHC can do, but for a lot cheaper.
So quantum teleportation of two properties and the discovery of vile fermions take slots 4 and 3 on Ian's list this year. As always, there's more information available on the website www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. In the next edition, the list concludes. While you're waiting, here's a snippet of what's still to come.
It fundamentally alters our perception of reality.
For now, thank you again to Ian Durham. I'm Zia Morali.